I've been talking to lots of judges lately because, you know, the judiciary is an important part of our constitutional order. In fact, you might consider judges to be on the front lines of protecting our Constitution because they are the ones, both state and federal judges, who are charged with interpreting it. So I've spoken to a federal trial judge. His name is Ronnie Greer. I've spoken to a state trial judge. His name is Thomas Seely. And today I'm going all the way to the top, all the way to the top of the state of Tennessee anyway, and I'm speaking with the Chief Justice of the Tennessee Supreme Court. His name is Chief Justice Gary Wade. Now, Chief Justice Wade and I had a fascinating conversation, but toward the end of it, I realized that I'd walked straight into controversy because when I was asking him how Supreme Court justices are picked, it turns out that there's an election coming up, and he has some serious opposition. I'm Stuart Harris. It's your weekly constitutional, and today it's all about the Chief Justice.
You're listening to your weekly constitutional, underwritten by James Madison's Montpelier. Your host is Stuart Harris, who teaches constitutional law at the Appalachian School of Law in Grundy, Virginia.
You know, sometimes I start out doing an episode thinking I'm going to talk about one thing, and then it turns out that I end up talking about something else entirely, or at least something I didn't really anticipate talking about. And so it is today with my interview with Chief Justice Gary Wade of the Tennessee Supreme Court. My intention was just to ask him, as I've asked a federal judge and a state trial judge previously, what it means to do his job and how he got his job and what his job is like on a daily basis. And we do cover all of those things, and all of those things are very interesting. After all, Chief Justice Wade is the highest elected judicial officer in the state of Tennessee. But along the way, as I asked him how one becomes a Chief Justice of the Tennessee Supreme Court, that it turned out that he has an election coming up in the very near future. And unlike many judicial elections, at least traditionally, he has a great deal of opposition. And it turns out that there's a great deal of controversy surrounding not just his election, but the election of two of his colleagues on the court who are also up for what's commonly called a retention election. So stick around, and at the end of this interview, we'll talk about an unexpected, at least from my perspective, an unexpected controversy.
My name's Gary Wade, and it's my honor to serve as the Chief Justice of the Tennessee Supreme Court.
I must say that I am very impressed because, in case a person doesn't know, anyone who's listening doesn't know, you are the highest judicial officer of the great state of Tennessee.
Well, the entire Supreme Court is the highest court in the state of Tennessee, but I view the Chief Justice as merely first among equals. The other five, or all five members of the Supreme Court are basically a team, and they act as a board of directors for administrative purposes for the judicial system in the state of Tennessee. And at the same time, of course, we are the highest court to which one may appeal a case of controversy that begins in the trial courts.
Well, that's a very nice way of putting it, but you're still the most important. Okay, that's my characterization. You can be modest, but I'm still very impressed. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, and I'm pleased to be here.
Absolutely. Why don't we begin with that? You were going to tell me what the Supreme Court does, and I think a lot of people forget that every state has its own constitution, every state has its own law, and that you are the ultimate authority interpreting that.
Right. Of course, as you well know, we have the federal system and the state system. They're very different. In the federal system, judges are appointed for life. In the state system, we elect our judges to eight-year terms. Mm-hmm. And in fact, this coming August 7th will be the election of each and every judge in the state of Tennessee for an eight-year term.
You all come up at the same time.
Absolutely. And I don't know who invented this situation, but it at least only causes a crisis within the judiciary every 8 years. So it's probably not a bad thing that each of us are on the ballot at the same time.
Understood. Well, we'll get to that in just a minute because there's some interesting things to talk
about.
And
I might add that 152 trial judges in the state of Tennessee and 29 appellate judges, elected in different ways, of course, but all will be on the ballot come August 7th.
Well, then mark your calendars, folks, and make sure you vote in those elections. And as we have this discussion continues, you'll see why it's so very important that you do so. But before we get there, let's go back to the beginning. Where do you hail from, Chief Justice?
I come from a little country town, at least when I was growing up there, called Sevierville, Tennessee.
Named after John Sevier?
Absolutely, our first governor. Mm-hmm. And people now know Sevierville more as the hometown of Dolly Parton than anything else. As a matter of fact, Dolly and I were in high school together.
No way.
Absolutely.
No, did you go out?
Everybody tried to go out with Dolly. So I would put myself in that category. But She was a couple of years ahead of me in school. And while she has held up far better than I have, low these many years, she's still a great friend and a great supporter of our community in Sevierville.
Well, now that's extremely exciting. If I'd known we were going to talk about Dolly Parton, I would have had a whole different set of questions.
Absolutely. we'd probably be talking about Dolly and her life and success in show business.
I see. Okay, so after you went to high school with Dolly Parton in Sevierville, I understand you went to the University of Tennessee.
I did. I'm a product of Sevierville Elementary School for 8 years and then Sevier County High School, where I graduated in 1966. In East Tennessee, many of us didn't know that there was another school besides the University of Tennessee, and being a public school, it was affordable. So,
what did you major in at UT?
I was in liberal arts, and mm-hmm. I majored in both English and psychology in undergraduate school, but I knew that I was going to law school, mm-hmm. and or at least I hoped I would be able to go to law school, and so fortunately, I was able to gain admission and graduate from there.
Was it always going to be UT in 1973? Was it always going to be UT?
It was always going to be UT. I'm the third of four sons. To parents who were wonderful and dedicated to the education of their children. And from the first time I can remember, my mother's goal was for each and every one of us to graduate from the University of Tennessee.
Well, congratulations.
We all made it, thank goodness.
Uh-huh. And congratulations
so far,
to your mom.
So good.
Good, that's tremendous. Well, of course, UT has a special place in my heart because, of course, I've been teaching there for the last several years. I think we missed each other by a few years. But it's a wonderful place with a wonderful faculty. And indeed, you know one of my colleagues there, don't you? At least one, Penny White.
Yes.
Who used to be on your court.
She did. She mm-hmm. was elected as a trial judge, as I recall, in 1990. And then when I was on the Court of Criminal Appeals, she was appointed by Governor McWhorter to the Court of Criminal Appeals. So she was a colleague there. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, she was on accelerated process. She was soon appointed to the Tennessee Supreme Court, succeeding Justice Charles O'Brien mm-hmm. of Crossville.
And she's now doing great things at the UT faculty.
She is.
Absolutely. Okay. But going back to your particular career, you graduated from UT Law School in 1973. And what did you do first? How did you start out?
Well, I fortunately was able to return to a job in Sevierville, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. I joined the firm of Ogle, Schmutzer, and Wade. And we were together for about a year until Al Schmutzer, Jr., ran for district attorney general and was elected in 1974. And then suddenly two lawyers are trying to do the work of three lawyers. Mm-hmm. And so by that time, our firm was handling a number of cases. And I was so fortunate during that time to be involved in a number of jury trials, which is a rare a bird these days, given the effect of mediation and the delays often experienced in the trial courts. Many cases settle, thank goodness, else the system would break under its own weight. But we had a trial practice during those years, and my law partner used to say that we specialized in everything. We were truly a country law firm.
Whatever comes through the door.
Absolutely, and we would if we didn't know much about that area of the law, we'd take the time to become familiar with it. Bob had a very fine library, certainly by standards in our small town. And He was very popular. He had a lot of clients, and fortunately, I was able to succeed to take over many of those clients as he got a little older in the practice.
You were a small-town lawyer back in Sevierville, but then something made you leave private practice.
Well, I was I took an interesting detour while I was in the law practice, and it was in addition to the law practice. You're not aware of this, but in 1977, at the age of 28, I was elected mayor of Sevierville, my hometown.
Mayor of Sevierville.
And served there for five terms as mayor. And
how long is each term?
2 years.
So you were 10 years.
So I had an election every 2 years, but that was in addition to the law practice. And some people said that I was paid what I was worth as mayor. It was a volunteer job at that time. And I used to describe my primary duties as mayor as being in charge of barking dogs and late garbage pickup,
mm-hmm.
because I seemed to get all the calls when those situations were left unresolved by those who served the city as employees. But it was a great time, and I think I got a postgraduate course in people at that time.
Understood.
It was a very valuable experience, and while it was not a job that offered any kind of salary, it was one that was open-ended. I could spend a full day in the law practice in my office, and then about three nights a week, we would have a meeting that would last between an hour or 2 hours. It took a little family time away from me, and the children of my wife and I grew, we decided maybe it was better for me to leave out the mayor thing. I had plenty to do as a young lawyer.
Understood. But that experience as mayor really is, if not unique among lawyers, it's certainly something that I think really gives you a different perspective on things, because now you're part of the executive. You're in a different branch of government when you're doing that. I imagine that gives you a bit more appreciation of the responsibilities of the executive.
It gave me an appreciation for budgets.
Mm-hmm.
The budget in the city of Sevierville in 1977 was $1.1 million a year. My guess is that it's somewhere around $60 or $80 million a year today, and that's not counting the electric system, the utility system that it owns, and the water department. Of course, Sevierville has changed dramatically during those years as Gatlinburg grew out of the park and then mm-hmm. grew into Pigeon Forge, and then Pigeon Forge extended on into Sevierville. And now from exit 407 at I-40 to
Sevierville's basically
park
sort of taken over the exit now, yeah.
Is simply a parkway. We start at Smoky Stadium at exit 407 on I-40 and extends right up to the Newfound Gap at the top of the mountain inside the park.
But at some point, you left Sevierville.
I did not leave Sevierville as a resident. I still live in that beautiful little town and live in the same house I lived in at the time that I was in the law practice. And all of my children attended the public schools in Sevier County and graduated from there and went on to college. And now I'm the proud grandfather of four.
Mm-hmm.
Today is my oldest daughter's or granddaughter's birthday.
What's
and
her name?
She is 10 years old, and so let me say happy birthday to Gretchen Sidney Wade.
Happy birthday to Gretchen, absolutely. But what I was getting at was not that you may have moved away technically from Sevierville, but your job has certainly taken you out of East Tennessee. What was your path to the Supreme Court?
Well, it was a fairly dramatic change for me, going from basically being in court on something every day. We jokingly called our General Sessions Court the Supreme Court, because when people would call the office and we weren't there, we liked for our receptionist to say, "Mr. Wade is over in the Supreme Court today." It sounded much better than over in the General Sessions Court.
Right.
So that was my favorite name for the General Sessions Court. Never did I realize that one day I would serve on the real Tennessee Supreme Court. But the transition came about for this reason. While I was mayor, which was a nonpartisan office, I have been—I actually served as vice mayor for 2 years before I became mayor. And all six of those elections were nonpartisan. So I've never really worn a party label. And the same has, of course, been true in the appellate court system.
It's Weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and I have the honor and privilege today of speaking to the Chief Justice himself of the Tennessee Supreme Court, the Honorable Gary Wade. He's just been telling me about his early political career and how he actually was the mayor of a small town in northeast Tennessee, and how when he became a judge, party labels, to the extent he ever really had them, sort of went by the wayside. After the break, we'll come back and speak some more with the Chief Justice. Stick around. You're listening to your Weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and today I'm speaking with the Chief Justice himself, the Chief Justice of the Tennessee Supreme Court, the Honorable Gary Wade. Before the break, he was just telling us about his early political career, and it turns out that most of his politics have been nonpartisan from the get-go.
But one of the individuals that I learned to appreciate in the General Assembly was the Speaker of the House, Ned McWhorter. Sevierville could not afford lobbyists at that time, and we would only rarely have a circumstance that arose that would warrant visiting our legislators in Nashville. But we had an issue that caused me to come in contact with Speaker McWhorter at that time, and we were able to resolve the dispute. He was impressed by the fact that the lobbyists that I worked with at that time, and against, you might say, from another city, were able to reach a resolution of a pretty sticky problem. A year later, after his election, knowing that I had chosen not to run for a sixth term as mayor in Sevierville, called and asked if I had an interest in applying for the position on the Court of Criminal Appeals. Justice Charlie O'Brien, who I mentioned earlier, had just been promoted to the Tennessee Supreme Court by Governor McWhorter, and he asked if I would apply. There was some delay in my response to him, but to make a long story short, after a couple of weeks, I did apply for the position. I had to get the permission of my law partner first. We had a prayer session to come to some resolution about what my future ought to be. I was still 39 years old, relatively young into practice. And so I applied for the position. My law partner was kind enough to nominate me before the Appellate Nominating Commission, as it was called at that time. And I made the list of three, and fortunately was selected by Governor McWhorter
when you
in
say
1987.
You made, excuse me, that was 1987, okay. You said you made the list of three. Who selected this list of three from the
Nominating Commission does an interview, studies background, reviews cases that you've handled, briefs that you've written, if a trial judge applies for the appellate position, would look at some of the rulings by the trial judge, and they select from a pool of applicants. As I recall, there were 8 or 10 applicants for the position. Three of us made the cut, and under the statute that existed at that time, all three names were submitted to the governor. There's a TBA background check at that point. Fortunately, I got through that somehow, some way.
Congratulations.
And the end result was that Governor McWhorter chose me to serve on the
That is marvelous, and I'm very glad for you. But I'm just, again, I'm curious, who was on this Judicial Nominating Commission? Was it a group of employees or appointments? Were they partisan, nonpartisan?
No, it was a nonpartisan group. Those who served were appointed by various sources. The Tennessee Bar Association selected one. The Tennessee Association for Justice selected one. The District Attorney General's Conference selected one. There was no public defender's office at that time, so they were not involved in the process. As I recall, the governor had either two or three appointments to the nominating commission, and there may have been lay people who were also appointed. But that's been so long ago. It's 27 years. I can remember some of the individuals who served on it. I remember the lawyers in particular who did. Gary Brewer from Upper East Tennessee, Morristown area, was one of the lawyers on the the commission. I remember that Sid Gilreath of Knoxville was one of the lawyers on the commission.
But this was essentially a group of volunteers who were there to assess your credentials.
Absolutely.
And okay. It was not a political process.
The plan was called a Modified Missouri Plan at that time, and it was designed to select judges based upon merit rather than partisanship. And so that is while it's been tweaked and changed from 1987 until now and is now called the Tennessee Plan, because it was at that time it only applied in 87, it only applied to the intermediate courts, that is the Court of Appeals and the Court of Criminal Appeals. But in 1994, as I recall, the date it was extended to the Tennessee Supreme Court, so that thus the name changed from the Modified Missouri Plan to the Tennessee Plan. And but essentially the same process about nominating and three through the nominating commission, and then the selection of one by the governor.
Okay.
And I must add this, and within 2 years thereafter, I had to appear on the ballot. So in 1990, at the next state election, I appeared in what's called a retention election. At that time, the language was something like this: shall Judge Gary Wade be retained as a member of the Tennessee Court of Criminal Appeals? And the answer was either yes or no. And fortunately, in 1990, I got more yeses than noes. Mm-hmm. And the same is true in 1998 and then again in 2006.
Okay, so every 8 years, you're going to have these statewide judicial elections. If there's a vacancy between these elections, you go through this appointment process you went through.
You
but
do.
Then the next time that there is an election, you have to stand. And you've done that, and you've been reelected several times.
Yes, and as a part of the Tennessee plan, there was another component added to the process, which I actually like. I think it tends to make judges accountable. And, of course, we know to be accountable to the rule of law and to the constitutions of the United States and the state of Tennessee, but there's a component about being accountable to the litigants and to the people. And what the Tennessee plan did, the one we work under at this point in time, was to provide not only for a nominating commission, a front-end selection process, but a back-end evaluation process. And so since beginning in the election of 1998 and until now, the appellate judges actually get grade cards.
Oh, do they really? Who
and
does
so,
that?
And so it's called the Judicial Performance Evaluation Commission. And so they have given me a grade card. And if any of your listeners want to see my grade card, it's accessible through the Administrative Office of the Courts. And there will be a publication shortly allowing people to view the comments of the nine evaluation commissioners who handed me my grade card just a couple of months ago.
Well, I want to know, but I don't want to wait. I want to know. Did you pass?
I passed.
You did pass.
I was somehow slid by. this was a very prepared evaluation commission. The first few years that we went through the process, there was a learning curve, obviously, for the commissioners and for the judges. Frankly, the prospect of being interviewed scared some of us judges to death. We were concerned that there might be a witch hunt type process. But instead, I think that those who supported the passage of the Tennessee plan were visionary they developed a scheme by which judges are answerable for their work. And it's not so much the who wins or who loses, but the timeliness of the opinions and the quality of the opinions, and in some regards, the correctness of the opinions. And six of the nine members of the Evaluation Commission were attorneys this past time. The only thing that's changed with the Nominating Commission and the Evaluation Commission in recent years is that in 2009, and of course, the General Assembly has control over how judges are selected in general, and they chose to change the appointment process, both on the front-end nominating commission process and on the back-end evaluation process, by having the two speakers, the Senate Speaker and the House Speaker, make those appointments. So the group that we faced this past October and November were evaluation commissioners appointed by Senator Ramsey, the Speaker of the Senate, and Speaker Harwell, the Speaker of the House. And fortunately for myself, I received all 9 affirmative votes, as did my colleague Sharon Lee, and the third justice who went through the evaluation process was Justice Connie Clark, my predecessor as Chief Justice, and she received 8 out of the 9 votes. So out of the 27 votes cast for the qualifications of the current members of the Supreme Court who chose to run again, 2 of our members chose to retire. We received 26 affirmative votes out of a possible 27.
Okay.
So good grade cards all around.
Good grade cards all around. It's your Weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and I'm speaking with Chief Justice Gary Wade of the Tennessee Supreme Court. And he's telling us now about how one becomes a member of the Tennessee Supreme Court and the process of judicial retention elections. After the break, we'll finish our discussion with the Chief Justice, and then we'll start talking about a current controversy surrounding his reelection and the reelection of 2 of his colleagues. So stick around.
State Supreme Court Justices Gary Wade, Connie Clark, and Sharon Lee are being targeted by Lieutenant Governor Ron Ramsey. Ramsey's been working to convince business leaders to support a campaign to oust the justices in the August election. David, let's start with you. What do you know about this issue?
Essentially, what's happening is the Lieutenant Governor is working on an effort quite passionately to essentially get 1, if not all 3 of these democratically appointed justices. I mean, the end game here is really to tip the balance of the court so that when the next appointment of the Attorney General comes up, they can get a candidate in more to the legislator's liking.
Clay, is this the role, though, of one branch of government to have its hands so deeply into the other branch when it's supposed to be co-equal?
I don't think it is. You know, it really does beg the whole separation of powers thing. And so here we have Ron Ramsey, arguably the most powerful legislative politician in the state, including the governor. And he is putting his political weight behind voting out these 3 justices. And he puts it in such crass political terms. He keeps talking about getting rid of Democratic justices. He claims that this court is soft on crime and anti-business. I would defy him to show, ample record to support that claim.
It's your Weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and I'm speaking with Chief Justice Gary Wade of the Tennessee Supreme Court, who's going to tell us a bit what it means to be Chief Justice, and then we'll get straight into a discussion of a current electoral controversy. I understand something really interesting happened to you right before you were first nominated to the bench. Now, tell us that story.
I'll be happy to. During my term as mayor, Dolly Parton, my high school mate, began to dart up the charts.
Uh-huh.
She became very, very popular and had her own television show, a variety show, for at least a year.
Mm-hmm.
But prior to that time, she had come back to her alma mater, Sevier County High School, and given a benefit every year for the high school band.
Dolly, that's nice.
Dolly played the drums, of all things. And the marching band. And my younger brother, Sid, sat beside her in the band and just adored her. So actually, those two knew each other better than Dolly and I did. But as mayor, I would MC the benefit that she had in Sevier County, and we would have you know, a couple of thousand people go, and it raised a lot of money for our local band. So we got even more acquainted during that time. I would see her about once a year during those years when she came back to do the benefit. So when she got a variety show, many of your listeners may recall that she was had lost a lot of weight.
Mm-hmm.
And the show, as I recall, ran just a year. But one of her last shows was a television Thanksgiving special. And, of course, I was still in my law practice next to the courthouse. And she and her production staff chose the Sevier County Courthouse as a site for her Thanksgiving show. And she invited everybody in the class of 1964 to join her on television.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a huge production. Now, here it is August, 90 degrees.
And pretending it's Thanksgiving.
And we're pretending it's Thanksgiving. We have hay bales and pumpkins and all sorts of things to make it look timely. And I'm sitting in my office on the second story, and I could actually watch the whole thing. And her staff was set up in a small trailer between my office and the front door of the courthouse. Well, the next day, I'm supposed to interview for the Tennessee Court of Criminal Appeals, and going before the Appellate Nominating Commission was quite an imposing process as mm-hmm. far as I was concerned. So I'm sitting there watching the festivities and thinking about the next day when Ted Miller, the general manager of Dollywood, came into my office and said, "Can you come over and meet with Dolly? She needs a boyfriend for the show." Of course, who could say no to that?
Oh, who could say? You're going to be Dolly's television boyfriend.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
And so I went over and went in the dressing area that she had in the small trailer, and she handed me a script. And she looked at the script and said, "You know, this is really not very good. Why don't we just wing it?" Of course, I'm nervous as a cat, and yet playing the role, the camera comes on us, and the first question she asks is, "Mayor, what do you think about my new figure?" And she had, of course, lost a lot of weight, and the only thing that came to mind was, "Dolly, I liked you better when there was more to love."
And
I'd ever been in that position before. And so we finished the show, and there were no cuts when it was finally came on in Thanksgiving. That's how it was shown. But back to the next day, I go to the nominating commission, and I'm facing about 7 or 8 very distinguished lawyers and other individuals involved in the nominating process, some measure of distinction in applying for the job with the appellate courts, and there's a certain decorum expected of all of the judiciary. And I walk into the room, and I look to the middle of the table, and I see the Knoxville News Sentinel, and excerpted in bold print with a front page story about Dolly Parton and her television show in Sevier County are the following words: "I think I liked you better when there was more to love. Former Mayor Gary Wade." And
oh,
so
man.
I thought my ship was sunk, and then there was no need to continue on with the interview.
Did anyone ever actually mention that?
No,
the
someone with a sense of humor had obviously put it on the table to get my attention before I sat down, and I don't think there was any reference to it at all.
Well,
so
good for them.
Fortunately, it made no difference to them that I had perhaps participated in something that did not look like it was very judged.
Well, I don't know what to be more impressed by, your chief justiceship or by the fact that you were Dolly's TV boyfriend.
Well,
that's pretty impressive stuff.
The TV boyfriend was a lot more fun from time to time, and I would say. But the chief justiceship, of course, has been a great honor, and it's been a very rewarding experience.
Well, we've talked about your selection. We've talked about you getting to the Supreme Court. Let's talk a little bit about the business of the court. Now, you have some administrative duties as Chief Justice in addition to your judging duties. Could you talk to us about what you do on a daily basis?
Well, I will, but let me give you a little more background. Remember, this was 1987 when I went to the Court of Criminal Appeals, and I served in that capacity for 19 years.
Oh, okay.
And the last eight, I served as the presiding judge, which is the chief administrative judge of the court. But there is far less administration involved in the Court of Criminal Appeals than with the Supreme Court. Governor Bredesen appointed me to the Supreme Court in May of 2006, and I began serving on September 1st of 2006. And we don't use the term associate justice, but that's in effect what we are if you want to compare it to the federal system. The federal system has the chief justice and eight associate justices. In our case, one might say that we have the chief justice and four associate justices, but the way we say it is the chief justice and the justices of the Supreme Court.
Okay.
And I point that out because, as I indicated, the Chief Justice is merely the first among equals. Mm-hmm. And the system that we have developed over the last 4 years is to rotate amongst, there were only four of us when we started, and to rotate amongst those four that were on the court on September 1st, 2006. And so my term will end on August 31st as Chief Justice. The duties you ask about. Well, the Chief Justice is the Chief Administrative Officer. However, the board of directors, so to speak, really governs the judicial department. And we have a variety of commissions. The Board of Professional Responsibility is a group that supervises the attorneys. There are strong ethics in the legal profession. Many people of our state find lawyers hard to love, but let me assure you that the ethics of our profession are state of the art insofar as governing the way lawyers do their business. And so if they violate any of those ethics or any of their clients have complaints against their lawyers, they can go, for example, to the Board of Professional Responsibility. We also have a commission for continuing legal education. Every lawyer is required, as you well know, to maintain their continuing legal education, to take a certain number of hours each year and that are certified by the commission. And each and every year, that commission accredits certain programs and allows credits and counts credits for each of the lawyers. We have also a lawyer's fund for client protection. Now, these are paid out of the funds in the lawyer's fund are paid like all other commissions governed by the Supreme Court are paid by the lawyers themselves. They pay a certain amount for the privilege of being a lawyer, and a certain amount goes to the Board of Professional Responsibility. A certain amount goes to the Lawyers Fund for Client Protection, and then a certain amount of that goes to the Tennessee Lawyers Assistance Program.
Now, at the risk of raising an unpleasant issue, I cannot ignore the fact that not only are you up for reappointment to the bench this coming August, but that apparently just of late there has been a rather concerted effort to prevent that from happening and prevent, indeed, not just you, but the other two justices who are trying to be reappointed have apparently been targeted. Do you have anything you'd care to say about that?
So I understand, and I, like you, read the newspapers and watch television, and this is unusual, but it's certainly the prerogative of the people. The office is an office of the people. And the way I view judges is something like this. We are, some are elected, Some are appointed, like myself, and then subjected to retention elections. Some at the trial level, as you well know, run in a judicial district. Some run as Democrats, some run as Republicans, some as independents. And then in some judicial districts, they run nonpartisan races, just place their name on the ballot and campaign like anyone else would. And in those judicial districts, the people usually know their local judges or know about them. So popular elections, I think, are entirely appropriate for those judges. On a statewide basis, I dare say not more than one out of 25 of your listeners today know the name Gary Wade as Chief Justice of the Tennessee Supreme Court, and I am not the least disappointed with that. I view us as sort of referees at the game of football or umpires in the game of baseball. We simply call the offsides and the balls and the strikes, and hopefully we make far more correct calls than incorrect calls. We are human beings, but by and large, I view the Tennessee judiciary today as better than it's ever been before. So having said that, and knowing that judges come into office from all walks of life, one thing I can tell you for certain in my 27 years of experience, however they got there, those same judges leave their politics at the courthouse door. And when they enter that courtroom, they realize that their obligation, their oath of office, is to follow the Tennessee Constitution, to follow the United States Constitution, and to allow the rule of law to prevail. Our jobs are hard enough without taking into consideration partisan interests. So my view is that we have a Supreme Court today that whatever partisanship existed during the selection process, and there's some involved in that in every case, that we are trained to throw that out the window, so to speak, so that the people who are the litigants in the courtroom are assured that they're going to have a fair and impartial judge, not beholden to the legislative branch, not beholden to the executive branch, but required to follow the rule of law. And so this is the concept that I see in these contentious days in the United States where suddenly it's so important for people to have their party in charge. I view the judiciary as the safe haven for people who prefer not to have that affect their daily life. And so...
But your safe haven doesn't seem so safe anymore. In fact, the lieutenant governor has apparently decided he doesn't like you very much.
Well, our safe haven is for the people, for the litigants. I think regardless the people that we have on the Supreme Court today, on the Court of Criminal Appeals and on the Court of Appeals, understand that Republican and Democratic politics don't have anything to do with their decision-making process. And just think about it. The General Assembly is very different, just as our Congress is very different. You watch the news every day and you see the contentiousness between the Republicans and the Democrats. And they're more divided today than in any time in my memory. There are fewer people, studies show, that are willing to walk across the aisle and talk about compromise or try to find middle ground. And I think that our state is like many other states, that we are following the lead of the United States Congress and becoming more contentious. Legislators are in the business of electing their party to office because they're consistent with their philosophies in theory. And in our case, Tennessee, of course, has become dominated by the Republican Party as opposed to 25 years ago when it was dominated by the Democratic Party. So there's been a shift in Tennessee, but you can see how the interest of the legislator is to elect more legislators, the governor of their party into office. And all I would say about partisanship in the courtroom is that it just has no place, and that the people of Tennessee should be assured that Democratic and Republican politics are not a component part of the dispute resolution process. So
if I'm a Democrat or if I'm a Republican and I come before you, that's not going to matter.
It doesn't make any difference. But it does, I think, in the General Assembly, and often does with the governor as well, who is beholden. You know this. You're a constitutional expert. But I often refer to Federalist Paper 78, written by Alexander Hamilton. He described, of course, the executive branch as having the power over the sword, the power over the military. He described the legislative branch as having the power of the purse, that is, to tax and to spend. And Hamilton described the judicial branch as the least dangerous, as the weakest, because it had no power over the sword or the purse, and merely exercised its judgment, and the judgment being independent of the executive branch or the legislative branch, so that those judges would not be beholden to a particular legislator or a particular party. And that, I think, is the issue at stake here. And I believe that the people of Tennessee love the fact that they can go into the courtrooms of the state and not have politics be a factor.
Yeah, I just wonder how. Well, you've told me that, you know, you're concerned about what's happening in the judicial selection process now. You've also told me that you actually support the idea of judicial elections. Wouldn't it be better? I'll play devil's advocate here. Wouldn't it be better if the states moved to a federal system where you went through an admittedly political process, but once you were in, you're in, and you've got effectively life tenure, and so nobody can pressure you. Nobody can threaten your job security next time an election rolls around.
Well, that was the fundamental theory of Alexander Hamilton when he wrote 78. And of course, the Federalist paper that he authored was a paper to persuade the Constitution that was ultimately adopted,
right,
to provide guidelines for the judicial branch of government in the federal system. And he, in fact, advocated lifetime appointments, which is, in fact, the way federal judges are selected. And certainly that accomplishes his goal to provide for a federal judiciary that did not have to answer to the Senate or the House or the leadership of the Senate or the House.
That's right. When Judge
or the President of the United States, for that matter.
When Judge Greer was in here just a few weeks ago and we were talking, we talked about that fact. And, you know, there's nothing I can do to pressure Judge Greer. I can't threaten his salary because I can't lower it. I can't threaten to fire him, even if I were President of the United States. I could threaten, but I couldn't do anything about it. And so that leaves him completely free to follow the law, to follow his conscience when he renders judgment. Now, if I'm the governor of a state and I've got judges who are coming up for re-election, I can call them up and I can say, well, you know, if you want my support in this election, you know, I really think I need you to hold this way in this case, or I need you to be a little harder on criminals or a little easier on my friends. I mean, at least the potential is there. And that seems to be what is happening now. At least we're getting such as hyper-partisanship. I think it would put a lot of pressure on state judges. That's why I tend to favor the federal model. But you still think judicial elections are a good thing?
Well, this is not criticism of the federal model. From a personal standpoint, wouldn't it be nice for Chief Justice Wade to have a lifetime appointment? But there is an accountability factor, and to me, that's always been essential. I want the people of Tennessee to know that the judges of this state are accountable for their actions. And the federal system basically conditioned the lifetime appointment on good behavior.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that when we in Tennessee chose to go to 8-year terms, we were simply saying the same thing in a different way. You're being elected judge in the first judicial district in the state of Tennessee is conditioned upon your good behavior. And good behavior encompasses your work ethic, your abilities, your communication skills with the litigants, the lawyers, and the people. And so I sort of like that accountability factor. And external validation from time to time can be a good thing. And so most fortunately...
if it comes.
Fortunately, most of the people in Tennessee like the judiciary. They believe it's fair, that it's impartial. And thus, I believe that the people of Tennessee will choose to elect those judges that they believe have been doing a good job. And in my opinion, the work ethic of this Supreme Court has been far superior to any that I've seen in the past. We've had great Supreme Courts in the past, but I can attest to the fact that the performance of the, not only the Supreme Court, but the Court of Appeals, the Court of Criminal Appeals, the trial judges' records that we see before us demonstrate clearly that Tennessee has a great judiciary.
Well, I guess we will find out whether the people, the good people of the state of Tennessee, agree with you. And this is my moment to shout out to people in this marvelous state and say, this is what this show's all about. This is part of the American experiment. This is when you get to step up and you get to exercise your rights. And I would emphasize also your responsibility. So whether you want to vote for the Chief Justice or if you want to vote for his opponent or an incumbent or an opponent, make sure you make an informed choice and make sure you show up at the polls on August 8th. Is that the date?
August 7th is the date. Okay. And the way our names will appear, of course, we have no opponent.
Well, excuse me. These are retention elections.
At the appellate level. Now, right. At the trial level, there will be some who are running unopposed. There'll be many contested elections, however, and it's important for people to vote in both. But typically, the appellate judges are the last thing on the ballot, and this is going to be a long ballot on August 7th. And the words are this. These are the magic words. Shall we retain or replace Justice Gary Wade on the Tennessee Supreme Court? And that is the question that the people of Tennessee will be asked. So we'll not have an opponent per se. And those of who would like change will suggest that that perhaps the performance of this judiciary at the Supreme Court level could be better, or that the people of Tennessee would be better served by people who are beholden to certain individuals in the Senate or the House. And again, I just refuse to believe that the people of Tennessee want anything other than fair-minded judges who are impartial when it comes to political partisanship.
Well, Chief Justice Gary Wade of Tennessee, I thank you very, very much for your time. I appreciate your sharing with us your experiences and your perspective, and I particularly appreciate hearing all about Dolly Parton.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it, Stuart.
And that's our show. Thanks so very much to Chief Justice Gary Wade of the Tennessee Supreme Court. What a fascinating discussion, and what an unexpected controversy that I stumbled upon. Maybe I should have been paying more attention to the newspapers. Our executive producer is Wayne Winkler. Our scheduler is Carol Hutchinson. Our music is by the Watauga Fife and Drum Corps. And my name is Stuart Harris. Remember, you are a part of the American experiment.